Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Golden Black Radio as we take a look at this week in Purdue Athletics. Here's your host, Kyle Charter. Purdue rode its defense early before the offense found its groove late as the Boilermakers beat Northwestern for their first Big Ten victory. A breakdown on Gold and Black Radio, plus the latest in Purdue football news. I'm Kyle Charters, Brian Newbert here to talk some basketball. We'll bring in Tom Deanhart in a few minutes as well. Gold and Black Radio welcomes Home Field Apparel as a new sponsor of Gold and Black Radio. Home Field makes premium collegiate apparel with vintage Purdue designs. It's incredibly soft and comfortable clothing printed and owned in Indianapolis. Use promo code G&B, that's spelled out G&B, and you'll receive 20% off your first purchase at homefieldapparel.com. That's homefieldapparel.com. Order by December 17th for guaranteed Christmas delivery. All right, Brian, let's talk a little bit of basketball from this last week, including the game against Northwestern on Sunday. Maybe a little bit more uncomfortable. Not sure a game was ever really in doubt, but maybe a little bit more uncomfortable than what we felt like it would be against a young Wildcat team, but Purdue's defense, again, excellent, much like it was in the midweek victory against Virginia.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if, there probably were some uncomfortable moments simply because the Purdue partisans watching the game probably wanted to blow Northwestern's doors off sooner, and Purdue would have had they been able to make a couple shots earlier in the game probably, yeah. But I think this was like a 6-point game with 13 minutes to go, something like that. That was probably a little bit too close for comfort, but I don't know if anybody who, might've been watching that game who saw what Northwestern was doing offensively or more importantly, not doing offensively against Purdue's defense that ever really should have given them reason to believe that Purdue wasn't going to, at least pull that one out because Purdue's defending at a very high level. Right now, obviously, they're doing a lot of things, a lot of very positive things in terms of playing good, winning basketball. And, the offense kind of regressed to its pre-Virginia mean, so to speak. But, Purdue did a lot of things right, too, yesterday. They defended really well. They rebounded really well. And they took care of the basketball, which was a really significant development for this team the last two games.
Yeah, why do you think Purdue's playing defense, or what is it doing that's causing teams – so much issues? I think part of it is the length inside, but the length on the perimeter too is giving opponents some problems. So, and Nojel Easter in particular was giving Northwestern and its lacrosse player a ton of issues yesterday. But what is it that you feel like Purdue is doing well defensively that's, causing teams some issues?
Yeah, I don't know if there's any one thing, but by and large through nine games, they've been pretty good defensively. The only lapse, I guess if you'd call it that, was kind of the end of the Texas game there where Matt Coleman made a bunch of plays late in the game. I thought that was more good offense than it was, substandard defense. I'm sure Purdue looked back on that and said there were things they could have done differently or done better, whatever it might have been. But I thought Matt Coleman kind of won that game more than Purdue lost it. I think, Purdue has good pieces defensively. First off, I think they've got arguably the two best defenders in the Big Ten for their positions in Matt Harms and Nojel Eastern. I think Eric Hunter's come a long way as a defender. I think Sasha Stefanovic tries really hard, and that's always a good start. I think they're a good rebounding team in general because of Harms and Travion Williams, and Aaron Wheeler has done some positive things, and Evan Boudreau throws his body around, and Nojel Eastern might be the best rebounder for his position in college basketball. And, I think that matters, and I just think that when Purdue's not turning the ball over and they're established in the half court, they're just really good. And, that was their hope to start this season ahead defensively because they figured the offense was going to be a process, and both ends of that statement to their nth degree have been true.
Purdue was much more efficient offensively in the second half. I think shot nearly 50%, hit 50% of its three-pointers, 4 of 8 after a 1 of 14 first half. Brian, I don't know if the stats bear this out, but it certainly feels like Purdue's offense is much more efficient, especially when Travion Williams gets a touch on offense, and it's probably true also when Matt Harms gets a touch on offense. those two can finish near the basket, A, but also pretty good passers, six assists, no turnovers in that victory against Northwestern on Sunday. But it felt like in the second half, Purdue found those two guys more often. And when it does, good things tend to happen.
Yeah, well, they found them early in the game, too, and good things didn't happen simply because Purdue couldn't make a jumper. And that falls kind of into this season-long trend of, you know, Purdue doing good things offensively and then coming away with nothing. You know, this has been an inconsistent team shooting basketball. I don't know what their percentage is now for the season, but, you know, they shot 52% from three-point range against Virginia. You know, that was probably an outlier. But they got great looks right off the bat, running offense through Travion Williams. They just couldn't make a jumper. If they'd been able to make a jumper early on or two or three, this would have been a 10-point game very quickly. And the way this game was played with the limitations of the opponent, a 10-point game in the first half probably ends up a 25-point Purdue win. But I thought in the second half, Purdue, you know, Travion Williams again to start the second half got Purdue going. He's looking like that guy where you can build an offense around. He's such a good passer in a lot of different ways, a lot of different settings, facing the basket, with his back to the basket, whatever else. I think they've found some basic offensive action that can really work for them with Matt Harms rolling to the rim when Travion Williams has it in the post, having a guard stationed in the corner, making that guy pick between guarding the corner and rolling to the basket to guard Harms. But yeah, Purdue is much better when they get the ball in the paint, obviously. That's one of Matt Painter's pet metrics. But it isn't just, you know, it isn't just Matt Harms and it isn't just Travion Williams either. You know, how many open threes the last two games has Purdue gotten by posting up Nojel Eastern? I mean, they've gotten at least three or four off of that as well. There have been a couple of instances the last couple of games, too, where he's been pretty aggressive off the dribble, gotten in the lane, kicked out to an open shooter for another good look. Purdue's getting shots in a lot of different ways, and a lot of them are starting with getting the ball in the lane. So that's been a pretty effective thing for Purdue's offense. Now, if they can just make the shots, you know, the offensive piece of this puzzle would look a lot better than it has.
Yeah. Historically, Matt Painter has stuck with lineups through victories. He's generally changed only when Purdue has suffered a loss. So maybe not surprising that he stuck with Harms and Williams in the starting lineup, with Stefanovic as well. I thought maybe there'd be a chance you'd go back to Wheeler just based on the matchups, but, you know, Purdue's won now back-to-back games with this lineup. You anticipate that, especially considering that Harms and Williams seem to have played well together, that he will stick with this lineup now?
Yeah, he's not one to mess with a good thing. But, you know, Purdue's not faced – anybody who can rub this raw, so to speak, yet. They've not faced athleticism. Yeah. They've not faced speed. They've not faced tempo. Really, the first two games of this have been ideal conditions for this because these two teams have lacked quickness. They've lacked speed. They haven't played very fast. They've allowed Purdue, mm-hmm. with these more plodding lineups, to get established in the half court in both at both ends of the floor. And to Purdue's credit too, though, they have also stayed out of transition defense by not turning the ball over. If there were situations where you had somebody like a Michigan State who's running at all costs, you know, that is going to be, that's going to be kind of the test of this thing, as Purdue well knows. And that's where, you know, Purdue's going to talk about, well, we have to flip the matchup. We have to take for everything we give, that kind of thing. But so far, so good, you know. But I think, too, there's some things here that have to be ironed out. I think, you know, Harms and Travion Williams, I think the chemistry is going to get better as they play more together. I think Purdue has to find something offensively when those guys cycle out of the game together, which will happen from time to time, as it did twice yesterday. You know, Purdue didn't have a lot of offense on the floor when those two guys were on the bench together. And typically, you've always had one of them out there. And when you've always had that one guy you could run offense through in the post. And yesterday for extended stretches, they didn't. I think that's a complication of this. That's part of the trade-off, but you know, so far so good through two games, but we'll kind of see moving forward.
Yeah. That Wheeler, Boudreaux, Eastern, and then two other guys offense was a little bit of a struggle. And part of that is Wheeler. I mean, you feel like he's going to start to hit some shots. I mean, he had some good looks again Sunday, and they're just not falling down. But he's too good a shooter, you would think, for him to continue to miss at the rate that he is.
Well, it's not just shooting. I mean, he has rebounded well. He's been a productive rebounder, you know, all season long. But aside from that, you know, I think defensively, you know, there's some trade-off there. He's not shooting the ball well. He doesn't have any sort of rhythm, it doesn't seem like, right now. You know, he did make a nice play against Northwestern zone yesterday to get the ball rolling on that one Eric Hunter three, did make a nice pass. I think there are some things he can absolutely bring to the table. He is too good a player to be this big of a non-factor. Just has to get in a rhythm, just has to find his place on this team, just has to get some confidence, and then, you know, perhaps things take off. But, you know, he has to guard better positionally. He has to do more than just shoot jumpers. He has to use his athleticism. He's got to run the floor. Time has shown over and over again that when he's running the floor, when he's trying really hard, he's pretty good. Now, things have changed for him in terms of who he's playing with and, you know, when he's playing, things like that. So there might be a little bit of an adjustment period there, but he's just got to get going in every sense of the term for Purdue, for him to be a productive player.
Yeah. And he hits one or two of those shots, and it changes the feel of that first half, definitely. Because instead of up, what were they, up 6 or 8, you know, you're up 11, 12, 13, and on your way to a 20, 25-point victory, instead of it feeling a little bit closer than what you wanted it to be in the second half.
Yeah, and that's what you could say about the whole team, because everybody missed their threes early.
Yeah.
Purdue was 1 of 14 from 3, and probably 12 of those 14 threes were great shots, and that might be overstatement. But if you just make two more, you know, you're up 6 at halftime, 6 more points is 12 points at halftime, and Northwestern's not coming back from 12 down on the road.
No.
With that team. And chances are you take 12 and you double it in the second half at some point. But, you know, it's probably oversimplifying things to say Purdue just needs to make shots. But yesterday, early on especially, Purdue just needed to make shots.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Brian.
No problem.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll bring in Tom Dienhart. We'll talk a little bit of football with him. Some off-season news already for the Boilermakers. We'll do that here in just a moment on Gold and Black Radio. On the far end of Main Street in downtown Lafayette, you'll find East End Grill, industrial and classic. The restaurant is built like a steakhouse, but handles like a bistro. East End Grill's menu includes creative starters, simple chopped salads, burgers, fresh fish and steaks, and the signature shrimp and grits. The staff prepares every item from scratch and emphasizes simple meals that incorporate fresh, local, and seasonal ingredients. A warm and inviting dining room features a cozy bar that includes a great selection of craft beer, inspired cocktails, and a robust and expanding wine list. Whatever your entertainment needs are, a cocktail at the bar, dinner with family, or a special event in the private dining room, the energized and attentive staff is here for you. East End Grill in downtown Lafayette, welcome to our table.
Life doesn't come with a financial roadmap. It does come with a lot of bumps and red lights. Steering clear of those doesn't have to be difficult. With First Source Bank's online money management tools, you can see all your financial accounts, balances, and transactions in one place. So you can easily set monthly budgets to help manage expenses and debt. Get the green light to a successful financial future with First Source's money management tools. First Source Bank, where better is better. Member FDIC.
It's time to boiler up and join the Bronze Squad by gearing up with the best selection of Purdue apparel in stock only at Follett's. Visit the Black and Gold Mine store across from Mackey or Follett's Purdue West on State Street for the best game day apparel from Nike, Columbia, Champion, Cutter and Buck, and more. Shop Follett's late on game day weekends. Follett's has been your Purdue game day stop since 1945. If you can't make it to the game, shop online at FollettsPurdue.com.
Welcome to Golden Black Radio as we take a look at this week in Purdue athletics. Kyle Chargers here with Tom Dienhart as we talk a little bit of off-season football now for the Boilermakers, including Purdue's postseason banquet, which was Sunday. Tom, you get any feel about Purdue and sort of how it enters the off-season from hanging out at the banquet on Sunday?
Well, there's the resignation going 4-8 and missing the postseason. But You know, Kai, you always play the what-if game when you talk about the 2019 Boilermakers, I think. Of course, the big what-if, what if not for all the injuries, right? I mean, yeah, you know the roll call. The listeners know the roll call. It was stupefying. And I guess for Purdue to even be in position late in the year to attain bowl eligibility was a credit to the staff and the players. So, again, resignation to, a disappointing season. But, Kyle, there's a lot of hope because, as you know, buddy, a lot of talented players come back in 2020.
Yeah, certainly that's the case. And one of those players that returns in 2020 is one that's a bit of a surprise, and that's Lorenzo Neal announcing that he will return to Purdue. Tom, I would have put this in August as a 0% chance, not thinking then, of course, that he was going to play for his senior year in 2019. September, maybe a 5% chance. October, maybe 5% chance. November, maybe a 3% chance. And then all of a sudden in December, it's 100% chance that he is returning next year. I mean, it's a little bit of a surprise, I think, to see him coming back, but a good one for Purdue, no doubt about that.
Yeah, literally and figuratively, huge news for Purdue defense that can use all the big bodies it can find to fortify a defensive line that needs help, especially a tackle spot that needs help. Of course, Neal, what, 6'3", 315 pounds. He's an active guy, too, can push the pocket, clog, running lane. So he's going to be a nice asset for a line, I think. At least the first string has a chance to be a cut above, as I like to say. So, yeah, big news. You know, Kyle, I think he's got to show pro scouts that his knee is okay. Of course, he hurt that knee way back at Indiana in the finale of the 2018 season. Had surgery and, like you said, didn't play at all in 2019. Tried to play a few times or practice a few times and wanted to get on the field. There was some buzz that he had tweaked it in the practice and got spooked. So again, Neal, like I said, he's got to show, I think, not just himself, but again, the guys to the next level, that his knee is good and he can be a productive and a healthy defensive tackle at the next level, if that indeed is his destination.
Do you have any thoughts on, you know, whether he can play in the spring, whether he'll be available for then? And Purdue has some other guys,
yeah.
Jack Plummer being one of them, maybe the most notable, who, you know, is on his way back rehabbing and hopes probably to be back for the spring. Are there others there who might be on the verge, at least that you're aware of, who are hoping to be able to play spring football?
Yeah, there's how about Rondale Moore too, right? Obviously, he just played
four
games, hurt that hamstring against Minnesota on September 28th. The same play, of course, Elijah Sinlar got hurt. I don't know. You know, we didn't get a chance to talk to Coach Brohm at the banquet. Our next crack to speak with him will be at signing day, December 18th, a week from this coming Wednesday. So, yeah, we'll have a list of questions to pose, and then that certainly will be one of them, Kyle. You know, these injured guys, you know, who will be on the field playing in the spring? And you mentioned a couple of, the more notable ones, Jack Plummer, that quarterback spot's going to drip with intrigue. Of course, we're going to talk about Lorenzo Neal. I mentioned Rondale Moore. So, you know, I guess if I were just to make a guess right now, I would say probably not a whole lot of action for any of those three guys. That would be my, if I was a coach, my moving forwards philosophy. I just don't want to take any chance of getting these guys hurt, especially in the spring. Maybe get them out there a little bit. But, again, I guess I would be ultra cautious with that trio of Plummer, Moore, and Lorenzo Neal in particular.
Right. So Purdue on Friday makes an announcement for $15 million donation. It will change the name or make the name of the field at Ross-Ade Stadium, Roarman Field. I've been pretty outspoken on the idea that while I understand the sentiment toward Tiller Field, I just think that for where Purdue is and where Purdue wants to be, that it's got to be able to, make sacrifices. I don't even know if sacrifice is the right word, but be willing to do this kind of thing and accept donations and, you know, name things after donors. And in this case, the Roarman family. I just think for where Purdue wants to be, it's got to be done. And it says a lot about the Roarman family and its support of Purdue that it's willing to dole out that much money. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, $15 million, the largest gift the athletic department's ever gotten. I believe someone gave $10 million last year to endow the Purdue basketball coaching job. So, yeah, you know, Bob Roorman and his family put their money where their mouth is. A heck of a gesture, like you alluded to the university. And, you know, this is the tenor of the times, I think, is what you were alluding to. You have to be creative in how you raise money. And, you know, as I like to say, everything has a price, right? Everything's for sale, so to speak. And maybe that was sacrosanct ground to some people, the Rosade Stadium field. But again, Purdue's got to raise $120 million, at least that much, if they want to, you know, go forward with these renovations to Rosade Stadium. So again, this is just a beginning to that end. And I wouldn't be shocked if more things aren't, you know, sold in the future here. Maybe the South End Zone Pavilion, who knows, the concourse. And again, he has a price tag. And again, just look at across the country too, Kyle. We see corporate names on a lot of college facilities. Illinois plays basketball in the State Farm Center. Maryland plays football in the Capital One Field. And, of course, Rutgers has always had, for years now, a corporate name on their football stadium. So, again, it's just how we do business now.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. When I mean, I think Mike Wobinski wants this project going in the next couple of years, right? I mean, and to get there, it's going to need more donations and more significant donations like this one.
Exactly right. And this is a good first step, I think. You know, if you're a fundraiser for Purdue, you can go out to other people and say, look, we already got this guy on board, the Roorman family, for $15 million. And again, it's something that you can tangibly show other people that, hey, a person like this wants to be on board with this project. Would you like to follow suit? So, yeah, again, 2 years is what Mike sort of mentioned after the Board of Trustees meeting on Friday. We'd like to maybe get a shovel in the ground. I'm really not sure, Kyle, how much money they need in hand. Do they need half of it before they can start work? But I do know this, according to Mike Wobinski, they cannot afford to finance any of this project. They've already sort of to their hilt as far as debt management goes. And again, this thing has to be funded entirely with donations and can't be financed. So again, they've got a tall task ahead of them in the John Purdue Club.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly do. And are doing it at a time, you know, I think we know that the future is brighter than what it was here this last year, but you're trying to raise a lot of money with a football team that went 4-8 too. And that has to provide a little bit of extra challenge for Purdue as well.
Yeah, timing is not perfect, but again, Brahm, I think, showed maybe enough people the potential of the last couple years. Again, the back-to-back bowl games. I don't know about you, buddy, but you've seen a lot of Purdue football, but I never imagined the first 2 years Brahm was here, they'd go to back-to-back bowls. So again, I think we all know he can do the job. And again, as I sort of alluded to at the top of this segment, you know, this year, you know, was an outlier, I think, when you look at the injuries. I mean, who would have thought we'd be dissecting the play of Aiden O'Connell in the month of November as Purdue's starting quarterback? So, again, it's just been one of those crazy years. And like I said, going into the Wisconsin game, about the 11th game of the year, Purdue still had a chance to get bowl eligible, even though they had a walk-on center snapping to a walk-on quarterback. And even in the IU game, they had a former walk-on running back, Xander Horvath, who led the way. So, again, it was just a crazy year.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Hey, thanks, Tom.
Take care, buddy.
All right, let's take another break. We'll come back, put a wrap on this podcast. We'll do that here in just a moment on Golden Black Radio.
Your neighborhood bar, 6th Street Dive Bar and Grill, is a perfect must-stop location on your way to and from the game at the corner of 6th and Salem in Lafayette. Whether it be great food, authentic Tex-Mex, along with many Indiana favorites, served from 11 a.m. to 3 a.m. every day. Sports, games, live music, trivia, or just fellow Boilermaker camaraderie, the Dive is the place to go. Don't miss Geeks Who Drink Trivia at 7:30 Tuesday nights and live local music without a cover charge at 10 o'clock Fridays and Saturdays. If it's college sports you crave, the 6th Street Dive has you covered there, too, with its multiple big screens. So dive on in to the 6th Street Dive at the corner of 6th and Salem in Lafayette.
If you're looking to list or buy a home in Greater Lafayette, Tippecanoe County, or the surrounding counties, give me a call at 765-412-5217 or email at kyle@chartersteam.com. Part of the Charters team at RE/MAX Ability Plus, we can offer a specialized marketing plan with photos, video tours, and more to help you sell your house while getting you in your next dream home. Contact me at kyle@chartersteam.com.
Often, things are worth more than they seem. For Purdue grad and NASA astronaut Jerry Ross, incredible value was found in the Purdue Alumni Visa. Not just because of the exclusive Purdue card designs, but for the unlimited cash back and out-of-this-world Visa benefits. Discover the official Purdue Alumni Visa credit card. Apply today at PurdueFed.com. Purdue Federal Credit Union. Belong where you have worth. Federally insured by NCUA.
Welcome to Golden Black Radio as we take a look at this week in Purdue athletics.
Plenty of news and analysis on the site with Purdue basketball, also football news, and in the run-up to the early signing date for football coming up in the middle of next week also. So be sure to check out goldandblack.com. Also be sure to log on to our new sponsor, homefieldapparel.com. That's homefieldapparel.com. Use promo code G&B to receive 20% off your first purchase. All right, that'll do it for our show for this week. Thanks also to our sponsors, East End Grill, First Source Bank, Charters Team, and Remax Ability Plus, Follett's, the 6th Street Dive, and Purdue Federal Credit Union. For Brian Newbert and Tom Deanhart, I'm Kyle Charters. Thanks for listening. This is Golden Black Radio.